All right, guys, we are back. The I One Practice Podcast. This is episode 10. Last episode we did, we talked about the Jetta. We had our guesstimates on what it would take to win, what we were kind of going to do. And now we're coming back at you with the winner of the Jetta. We've got Ed Geddes with us today. We're just going to go over a few things and interview Ed on how he got it done, a little history on his finishes on Kentucky Lake, and let's get into it.
First of all, Ed, how are you today?
I'm good.
Good. I'm glad you're here with us. So you just won the Jetta tournament, so I would say pretty good turnout on that. Right. Can you kind of, I know you've already talked about it on other podcasts, but can you kind of recap what you did and how that went for you?
Well, basically, we started on a bar that had some topwater fish on it, and they were real shallow. And we pulled up on it. As soon as we got there, the boy with me, he hung a big one, and he got off. And then he throwed right back a second cast, got another one about four something. And so we had just hit the waypoint when he caught them two, and then I caught one, and he caught another, and I caught a couple, and we ended up, I think we caught like six or seven off that spot. But once we had that first little flurry, we had to work for them after that. We'd go around and get one bite and go around again and again and get one bite. Sure. So we ended up getting our last one about 10 o'clock.
Dang.
So we caught two on the first two casts.
Right.
And we were throwing various topwaters. We started off with evergreens, and we ended up catching one on a spook, one on a little evergreen, one on a big evergreen. One on a whopper, I thought a whopper popper, throwed it, caught one on the first cast with it after I turned it about twice. Never got another bite on it.
How's
it
that
was
work?
A good one. It's four plus, but
yeah.
Then he caught one on Carolina rig, believe it or not.
Sure.
But we used kind of a different version of a topwater for every fish.
Sure.
So I kind of went back through, not to already switch topics, but I just wanted to talk about this. So you've been fishing competitively for a very long time.
Since the 80s.
Since the 80s. MLF has you since, I think, the like 1995 on record, or 1999, somewhere in there. Do you know, and I think my math is correct here, do you know off the top of your head how many BFL events you've fished?
Not by the exact number. They claim I fished over 200.
Oh, yeah.
I got that 100. You know, they sent a little medal out there, but I fished 100.
But yeah.
He told me that I'd fished over 200.
Oh, yeah. I've got you. And again, my math could be wrong, but 209 BFL events.
That's probably right.
That's insane. So is there like a standout event that you had, or is there like a year that you had that was like, this is the year for Ed Geddes?
I had a weird year. I had a year where I caught nothing, and I almost didn't win any money at all.
Really?
This is kind of weird. The year I did that, I gave up teaching and coaching to fish.
Yeah.
And I had the worst year I've ever had. I didn't hardly get a check, and I had all kind of bad luck. It was unbelievable.
Why do you think that was?
I don't know.
Don't know?
But here's what happened. I went back to coaching and teaching. The next year, I had the best year I've ever had.
Huh.
It's a little bit strange.
It's funny how that works.
A little strange.
Yeah. It's like you were thinking about it too much.
I don't know.
When you weren't doing other, you know.
But the next year, I had a W-9 for $160,000.
Yeah.
I won a BFL regional. I won a series tournament it wasn't series back then, but it's the equivalent at Gunnersville. So I had won two big tournaments, and they were, you know, back then at the BFL regional, you want a truck and a boat.
Yeah.
You got a Ranger boat and a Chevrolet truck.
Yep.
And so I won both of them. Plus I won several more tournaments of just local stuff.
Sure.
I mean, I had an incredible year.
And what year was that? Do you remember?
It's in the early 2000s, but I don't remember exactly.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
So what exactly, I mean, you've been all over the place, you know, Alabama, all over Tennessee, LBO here. So what exactly drew you to Kentucky Lake?
Well, I came, we were fishing the old PBF trail. Mm-hmm. It was a really big buddy trail at one time. It was one of the best ones that's ever been. And until he, though Mike Stubbs was running, until he sold it, it was the buddy trail in the South. It was 160 boats every time at least. And they came to Gonerville, and we just fished to Gonerville, and we won some of them. And we caught them on crankbaits like always. And biggest stringer I've ever weighed in came in a PBF. We caught seven fish limit originally. We had seven that weighed 47.7.
Golly. And,
it was in a PBF tournament. But those guys from Kentucky, the PBF tournament trail went from Gonersville to Old Hickory, and they fished Kentucky Barkley. And I think that was it. And we were only just fishing the one. And they said, why don't you come up to Kentucky Lake and let us win some of your money? I told Bill, let's go up there. And we came up here, and he brought his boat, and I brought mine. We were going to see what we could do on our own. So I went. I spent 3 days in Sandy, and he spent 3 days elsewhere.
Yeah.
But anyway, we caught seven. They weighed 28 pounds, finished third. Mm-hmm. The Schroeders won.
Yep.
And they were really good at that. I mean, they're still really good. They were really good back then.
Right.
They dominated.
Yeah.
And but we fished a tournament here, and I love the lake. It's set up for what I, you know, the crankbaiting that I love to do. It's set up better than any place I'd ever been.
Mm-hmm.
And probably most people would say when this lake was on its best crankbaiting, there's no better in the whole country.
Really?
I don't think so.
So what year was it that you moved here?
I moved here in 15.
2015?
The last year we had grass.
Yeah.
And I had decided to retire from teaching. I still coach up at Paris, but I quit teaching. And I had choices of going back to Gonersville or going here or going somewhere. I was actually living in Columbia, Tennessee at the time. I was mm-hmm. teaching at Santa Fe. And I decided I wanted to come somewhere where I didn't know it so or have a place to explore. Because we came up here once a year, but still, there's so much, you know, left to know.
Yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And there still is.
Sure.
Because it's so big.
Yep.
So, and it had grass. And that attracted, of course, that didn't last long.
Yeah.
2015 was the year it vanished.
Right.
We fished it that summer, and it was incredible. I also do a lot of grass fishing from Gonersville.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, it disappeared that winter.
Right.
Or spring. Actually, it was a spring, but it actually disappeared. Because it did come up in 16, but it quickly went away. But anyway, the grass and the vastness of Kentucky and Barkley attracted me, so I moved up here, and then I found a place to, you know, that I could coach a little bit,
sure,
but not teach.
Right.
I'd have some time.
Yep.
So that's why I moved here.
Okay. So since you've been here, how has your fishing techniques evolved from when you got here to now?
When I got here, I was a grass fisherman. And a ledge fisherman. But I preferred the grass because I didn't have much company.
Mm-hmm.
And the ledges were just getting hammered.
Yep.
And I got frustrated with ledge fishing because on the tournament day, if you didn't get a good draw, and I don't like to pull in on people, so I had a hard time finding a place to fish. Sure. I might have 35 schools and couldn't fish any of them.
Right.
I already saw a boat on all of them, so it depended on draw too much. But in the grass, I was able to fish almost every place I found.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And the fish were equitable in size and numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't back. I fished a couple of tournaments in August where I caught 40, 50 bass in the grass in the heat.
Wow.
And Brent Anderson and I fished one. We had 26 pound, got beat. Matt Robertson come in and beat us by a couple few ounces, but we caught him out of the grass in August. I had 26 something. And I had another big stringer in the ABA where I won the tournament out of grass. Like I caught 10 on 10 casts when I pulled up to the spot. and had 20 something pounds in 30 minutes and kept catching them all day. And the grass fishing was phenomenal and it was untouched for the most part.
Yeah.
It was just a very few people doing it, but it only lasted one summer.
Sure.
Right.
Gone. Then it was gone.
So then the ledge fishing went out with us. You know,
sure.
When the carp took over and the grass went away, the ledge fishing started going away too.
Yeah.
And my theory, I don't know if you want to hear my theory, but my theory is that when those big carp got out there on the ledges, they ran the gizzard shed off.
Yep.
They're filter feeders like gizzard shed are. Mm-hmm. They're basically giant gizzard shed.
So they get really. The same place, right?
They eat the exact same stuff.
Yep.
And that stuff sets up best on those ledges in the summer.
That's right.
And so they took the places over. And I don't think the bass care about them. I think the bait cares about them.
Sure.
You know, 30-pound carp out there
right.
all over them, filtering the stuff out of the water. They couldn't compete.
Sure.
And so the ledge fishing went away. So I gradually, over time, have started using the live scope. And at first, I just mainly used it to get a brush pile here and there. And mm-hmm. then gradually, it's just like everybody else, started doing it more and more and more.
Do you feel like you ever do it too much to where you could have been doing something else before live scope?
I think at the beginning, I didn't do it enough.
You didn't do it enough.
I didn't make good use of it.
Sure.
Even though I used it to a point, I wasn't even looking for fish so much.
Right.
There was so many fish out there.
You
know that. You've done it. And there were so many fish out there with mind-boggling,
yep.
you know, carp and everything. There's all kind of trash fish in mm-hmm. the Tennessee River, and here especially. You got catfish, drum, white bass.
Yep. Sauger,
carp, sauger, yeah. gar. I mean, everywhere you look, you saw fish.
Yep.
And I threw at some of them, and I never would catch one. And I just kind of bailed on it to start mm-hmm. with and just concentrated more on fishing the structure.
Sure.
Like a stump or a rock or something like that. And that's success.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I caught them doing it, but I wasn't using it to its fullest extent.
Mm-hmm.
And so gradually you know, with Jake Lawrence's success, Mateo, and some others, that I saw how good they were doing, and they were paying a lot more attention to the fish and what they were seeing. I learned to distinguish them a little better. And so last 2 years, I've been trying to go that route.
Sure.
To learn what they look like and to visibly see them in the brush. And you don't always see them, but a lot of times you can.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No, you're good.
So to kind of piggyback off of using live scope, using that and utilizing that now in how you fish, how is that different from what you did back in the 90s and 80s?
Well, the 90s and 80s, I looked for the underwater structure, but it wasn't stumps or brush.
Right.
It was the drop-offs. And the fish favored places where like a little point stuck out and pointed in the current, or the river ledge had a little turn in it, or mm-hmm. a creek channel off the river, or a bend in a creek. Or I look for all that kind of stuff, humps, and then you look front end of them. Are they on the current side or the back side? Or, you know, and I was pretty good at finding fish by just fishing the underwater structure.
And this was paper map, right?
Originally,
you didn't have electronics.
Originally, I was telling them on the other.
Yeah.
Originally, I started off trolling to find the drops when I was young.
Yeah.
And I'd find the drops trolling. I'd take a rock and a rope, piece of a block, and drop it till I got to the top of the drop. And then I would anchor and just fan cast. There was no sonar of any kind.
Right.
Not anything.
Yeah.
And that was the only way you could do it. And I caught them. This was at Logan Martin. I grew up there. And I caught them. I was out there in the middle catching them, and nobody out there. I had all of myself. I was fishing virgin scopes. Hmm. And it was unreal.
Yeah.
They never saw bait.
Right.
But gradually, the first green box came out. It was a sonar. So now I had a way to find the drops without trolling and just idling. Logan Martin, for some reason, never had any good maps back in those days. Hmm. You couldn't use a map.
Yeah.
But then when I went to Gonerville and started doing it, I switched to using the TVA maps and ours, some other kinds. And so I would seek out the different little corners I see out there, every point, every corner, every turn, everything odd. If it was underwater and it was odd, I hunted it. And you would do that you might do it 3 or 4 hours. This is when I first started, Gunners. You do it 3 or 4 hours, all of a sudden you hit a big school of them. Then you fish 3 or 4 hours without a bite, and then you hit another school of them. And when you found them, it was unbelievable.
Right.
Nobody, I could imagine, yeah.
Nobody was doing it.
Right.
I mean, it just wasn't happening. And the only person, there was one guy, Don Snyder, won a BAS this tournament, Gunnersville back, I think it was 88, somewhere right in there. And I saw what he did, and that's when I really started expanding on it. We fish a lot of grass, too, because my partner was really good in the grass. Mm-hmm. And we fished a lot of grass, but I started looking for them really hard, and I started finding even a lot more. And I didn't use the big crankbait at first. Used Carolina rig more.
Yeah.
So he used the crankbait. So I took the crankbait out the very next day after he won the tournament, and I found one of the best places on Gunnersville that day after about 4 hours of not getting a bite. And so it just took off from there.
Sure.
Every time I went, I looked for deep fish.
Right.
And I'm kind of an explorer by nature.
Sure.
I'd rather go look than catch.
Yep.
I mean, if I know where there's 20 pounds out here right now, I won't go fish them. I'll go look for another spot. It's just my nature.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Sure. So kind of tying in Gunnersville and Kentucky, like which one, I know you didn't have a lot of time to fish the grass here, but which one would you say was better? Numbers, size?
Well, for size, I would say Gunnersville was better. It's a little further south, mm-hmm. but I think had the grass not been eradicated, that Kentucky Lake would have become the best lake in the country.
It's by, a perfect, by now?
Yeah. Still? If the grass had never been gone, and well, I don't guess anybody knows for sure what happened.
Sure.
But the grass hadn't have been gone and it had stayed, this would have been one of the best lakes in the country.
Just because of the numbers of fish that were living.
Yeah, and it had size, too.
Size, yeah.
In fact, the size was way better when we had grass. 8, 9 pounders, 10 pounds were pretty common.
Really?
Oh, yes.
God, I haven't seen a 8, 9, or 10 pounder in years.
You don't catch them hardly ever anymore. But mm-hmm. back then, they were caught.
Yeah.
And that grass just makes the lake so much more fertile to fish.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one reason I came here was just because I thought it was going to become unreal good.
Yeah.
And the size of it, what makes a really good lake with grass is you have a lot of bars, but a lot of deep water.
Around them, yeah.
And because of that, the grass never covers the lake up. Now, if you go to Florida, the grass can become bad if it chokes the lake
mm-hmm.
to where all of it's grass.
Right.
It works way better on lakes with deep water around. Mm-hmm. Like it worked really good when it was at Santee.
Sure.
And then they killed it and quickly the lake went way down.
Right.
It's starting to come back. I've heard there's a little grass coming back now, but every lake that has deep water, like Gunnersville, Chickamauga, the Tennessee River was perfect for grass lakes because it had a lot of bars and a lot of deep water around them. And so the lake was never covered with grass. And in Kentucky, it was really better because they dropped the water and the grass didn't really stay up where it bothered everybody but a couple of months. It was mainly August and September.
Right, because they raise it and drop it, what, about 5 feet?
Yeah,
every
they
year?
Drop it so much, it kills a lot of mm-hmm. it. And it kept it from ever really spreading out and getting really deep.
Sure.
So about 8 foot was the cutoff. Where sometimes the Gunnersville would get 15, 16 foot deep. And then a lake like Seminole in Florida, I've seen it grow. I caught fish flipping there 23 feet.
Really?
I was actually flipping water that was 23 foot deep. I went back to my waypoints several years later, and the grass wasn't growing that deep that year. It stopped at 15, and my waypoints were sitting dead on 23, every one of them, where I caught fish in a regional down there.
Wow.
And, but, anyway, deep water helps.
Sure.
And by the way, Kentucky Lake grass grew. It was perfect. It couldn't be any better.
Yeah.
It grew
just
enough.
A lot of hydrilla, milfoil. What did you see out there? Because I got here after it. I never got to see it.
The first year I came to Kentucky. See, this grass scenario has been repeated.
It has?
Yes.
Here?
Yes. Okay. When I came here in the early 90s, and I don't remember the exact date, but it was early 90s, the light was covered with milfoil. It was milfoil.
North to south, the whole thing.
There was milfoil as far north as I went. I don't know if it went up above Ken Lake, because at that time we didn't go up there.
Sure.
We stayed around Sandy. We went north about as far as maybe Blood and south to New Johnsonville.
Right.
That's the terminal in New Johnsonville. And so from Johnsonville to as far north as we fished, there was milfoil in every pocket except Sandy. For some reason, grass don't grow good in Sandy. I don't know why. But every pocket, most of the river ledges had milfoil.
Right.
And it was about 8 foot deep. But the ledge fishing was phenomenal. We didn't even fish the grass. The ledge fishing was so good, we just
stayed out there.
You can't beat ledge fishing when it's right, right, and you can fish where you want to.
Yep. Yep.
And it was just unreal.
Yeah.
And the next year when we came, the second year, almost all the milfoil was gone. There was only a few little dead-looking sprigs here and there. They sprayed that. Now, it was admitted they sprayed it back then. That's what killed it. And it wasn't, you know, kept a secret. They used to spray Gunnersville too, but.
Isn't it just, it always blows my mind that this lake can be so big and there isn't one place that it'll grow again.
It's crazy.
One bar, one marina, anything. Like, why won't it come up at all?
I don't know.
I know there's grass carp and I know they might eat it, but do you think they could eat it in every square inch of this lake?
What I think grass carp can do is keep them coming back. Because when you kill it, if you kill it all at once, and then if there are some grass carp in there, and there are, they've been seen here. I see them. I know what they look like.
Yeah.
I mean, there are not a million of them. But
I see them in Paris Landing almost every time I'm in there.
There's two or three that hang around there. And grass carp, you know, if they find it, they'll eat it.
Sure.
And I don't think if the grass here ever got going, it would overwhelm them. But it hasn't been able to get to that point. It comes up every now and then. I've had several people tell me through these last 10 years that they found it, but it quickly goes away.
What about eelgrass? Because, you know, Pickwick and Gunnersville there was a lot of eelgrass at Pickwick this fall, but there was like barely any hydrilla.
Last year at Pickwick, there was so much hydrilla above the bridge there at Natchez Trace that you couldn't hardly fish. It covered everything.
And it's gone.
And this year it's all gone.
So it is
gone.
So is that kind of reminding you of what happened here? Same scenario?
Very similar. Now, the eelgrass, what was funny about the eelgrass is the biggest patch of eelgrass was at Ken Lake. I mean, not Ken Lake. The biggest patch of eelgrass was at the Natchez Trace Bridge, south about a quarter mile out there in front of that creek. That patch went away. Or I didn't see much of it when I went down there this past couple of weeks, and it relocated on the other side, a little further south.
Huh.
There's a fairly good little stretch of eelgrass. But hydrilla, I didn't find hardly. I did pull up a sprig or two.
But not much.
Not enough to fish it. In the area up there around Colger, I didn't hardly see any.
No.
Now, I didn't go way up. I don't know if it survived up there anywhere or not.
Well, it looked bare. It's like usually in a tournament, there's 20, 30 boats back there.
There's nothing back here right now.
The fish ain't even back there.
No.
I mean, maybe a few, but not as many.
They're just isolated. There might be one on a stump, and then you fish 50 to catch one.
Yeah.
They've just kind of vanished.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know what exactly. There's all kind of theories on where that grass went, but I don't know. It's strange because it was there even in the winter.
Really?
What I heard. And then all of a sudden it washed out and didn't come back.
Really?
But
so was it tough for you adjusting out here when the grass died? Because you said you had been catching some nice ones out of the grass, winning a few tournaments, and then it's gone. So what do you do then? Well,
there was a fair – those fish readjust. They go to the – when they quit going deep, they go to shallower ledges.
Sure.
And they were getting on stumps and stuff like that. And I still catch them on Carolina rig or little crankbaits. Mm-hmm. But for about 2 or 3 years, I did not catch them out deep. The first couple of years after the grass went, I believe we still caught them. And then
it got real.
It got way where you couldn't hardly catch one out there at all.
Right.
You had to fish shallower. And so I throwed a lot of there was one summer I caught them on chatterbait every morning, 2 foot deep. I caught them July. I'd catch 30. And now they weren't the same size. You know, you catch a lot of pound and a half, 2 pounders, and occasionally a little better one, but mm-hmm. still caught a lot of fish. It just wasn't the same quality. But the overall fishing dropped dramatically. There was a really good topwater bite for 2 or 3 years after they killed it. You could really catch them on topwater. And the first year after they killed it, it was really good. I can remember throwing them and have schools fall the topwater in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And big ones. But once they got caught out, it was like we didn't have good spawns for 2 or 3 years. And then all of a sudden, we didn't have any fish. And the weights went down, and it just got harder to catch them no matter what you did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it true that, I don't know a whole lot about the grass because I've not spent a lot of time around it because it's not here. The lake being as old as it is, does that make it tougher for the grass because the lake's not as fertile, or is that a thing or not?
You're talking about how making it grow?
Yeah, just the age of the lake. With the current washing everything up, and it's probably taking layers off the bottom over time. I think
the grass growing is no different than growing out in the yard.
Really?
It just grows out of the soil.
Hmm.
So it uses the soil more for nutrients than what's washed in.
Right.
Now, this I have noticed at Gunnersville and Chickamauga. I didn't stay. It wasn't here long enough for me to notice it here. But sometimes the grass grows up really thick. The next year it don't grow as good. It's like it may take 2 or 3 years where it comes up, but it just don't grow good. And I always thought that they used up some of the nutrients, just like crops do. But then it'll come up. All of a sudden, it'll come up better. There's a lot of factors on grass. How hot or warm the spring is affects it a lot. Mm-hmm. You have a warm spring, it starts early, it covers more area. You have a cold spring or muddy water or all that stuff that's detrimental to grass, then it don't grow as good.
Yep.
So you get various cycles of it. It's like Seminole. I told you, it went down there 1 year and it's growing in 23 foot. Next year, it's 15's the cutoff.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen the cutoff at Gunnersville will be 8, and I've seen it be 17, 18. It, a lot of it just depends on the weather in the spring and the nutrients. And if it grows really thick several years, I think it takes some of the nutrients and it slows it down.
Right.
And then I think nutrients wash in. But it seems to just kind of ebb and flow. But Gunnersville never went away on its own. It would get sprayed and a lot of it would go away. But they never totally annihilated at Gunnersville to where you couldn't find a little bit. Where here, it just, the 2 years that did it, after they did it the first time, the third year we came up here, there was none. You couldn't find any. And it went several years without, and the fishing went down. The largemouth fishing collapsed. The smallmouth fishing got better.
And that's happened before here too, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm talking about in the past now.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The first time the grass disappeared when it was millfall.
And this was in the 90s, you think?
Yeah, it was in the 90s.
Okay.
And then after the grass went away, the smallmouth fishery started increasing, largemouth fishery decreased.
And how long did it take for it to come back after that?
I don't remember the exact date the grass came back. But
year-wise, though, do you have an estimate?
It started back as naiad. And there were several years the lake had a lot of naiad, which is a stringy kind of grass, mm-hmm. don't grow as deep. But it increased the fishery, even though it wasn't hydrilla.
Right.
So and then patches of hydrilla started showing up and coontail. And then the hydrilla became the dominant grass. And bass love hydrilla. They love milfoil. Either one will make them go. And so once the hydrilla started back, all of a sudden, 2 pounders were everywhere. I mean, it was unbelievable how many fish were out there. And it quickly became bigger ones. And Garland's went through the same cycle where the grass went away and then it comes back. Lake's full of 2-pounders, 15-pound winds, 13 pounds gets 15th. You know, the weights get tight, everybody fishes. And then as it cycles, the fish start getting bigger. And then 25 pounds starts winning. And then people don't fish terms as much because yeah. it takes so much weight.
Right.
And the actual, when the stringers start hitting 28 and 30, it weeds a lot of fishermen out.
Guarantee it.
Because they don't feel like they can compete. But right. when it was 15, they had all kind of people fishing terms.
I bet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So following that same trend, do you think, or actually, I guess the better question would be, when do you think the grass would come back this time?
And on top of that, would you prefer it to stay away or come back? Because what you've learned now could change again.
It could. Here.
Yeah.
It's hard to say what the fish will do if it comes back, whether the smallmouth will decline again and right. all of a sudden this fish in these stumps and stuff gonna decline with it.
Mm-hmm.
Probably would.
I agree.
I don't know if it would totally go away, but it would probably become less, way less. I think it will hurt the smallmouth if the grass come back, but the largemouth will absolutely flourish.
Yep.
And it won't be long. Now, the thing about largemouth, when they get grass, they're bigger numbers.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And eventually bigger fish. When it peaked, it was common to catch 6, 7, 8 pounders.
Mm-hmm.
It was common.
And so you may not know, but when it went away here back then, I know we kind of just talked about this, but did people say, oh, it ain't coming back? The same thing they say now? It won't grow again. Or at Gunnersville, use Gunnersville as a, it's dead, it won't grow again. Because that's all I hear. Yeah, it's never coming back. That's what people say.
It would come back easy if what's keeping it from growing would stop happening.
So why can't they? So here's my thing. I feel like there's enough fishermen here in this area alone to get with Kentucky Fish and Wildlife or Tennessee, whoever, stake out a spot in a bay, plant it, and see if it'll grow. Because why wouldn't it? Why isn't there any? I don't know if I buy any of the theories. The lake's too big. There should be somewhere it will come up.
Well, I know it has come up.
And stay up.
But it don't stay.
Yeah, that's the problem.
And my thinking is there's enough grass carp in the lake that when they find it, they eat it up.
Yeah.
And that's why it may come up for 2 or 3 weeks before it goes away is the carp aren't everywhere.
Sure.
They're just kind of roaming in little schools. And as long as there's enough of them out there to clean it out when it comes up, it's not coming back. I don't think.
Right.
Now, is our carp being stocked in here? I don't know. Nobody knows.
Yeah.
Or were they just in here originally? They're getting bigger. I haven't seen any little ones, so I'm assuming they haven't been stocked.
Yeah.
But there was enough in here originally that I think they kept it from coming back, and I think they still are. They're getting bigger. And what I learned at Gunnersville, when they get real big, they don't eat much. But they got to get up to about 20 or better. There's mm-hmm. still some that are smaller than that, so yep. they're still eating.
Right. Mm-hmm.
When they're like, they say when they're like 8 or 10 pounds, they eat way more than their body weight every day. But then they get big, they quit doing that. They start, for some reason, they get lazier and don't seek out food as much. They don't have to have it. And so they don't eat as much when they're big. But they haven't got to that point, I don't think.
Yeah.
So at some point, the grass coming back may overwhelm them. If it ever gets started, it'll explode. I mean, if it ever gets a good start,
mm-hmm.
it can spread like wildfire. It did at Gunnersville. So it's all dependent on them, enough grass coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're not going to plant it. I would say there's no way because it's an exotic species. And they're not into planting exotic species. They would plant native stuff like water willow or something
yeah,
like
right.
that.
Yeah.
But I don't see them ever planting milfoil hydrilla or any of those non-native, because it's an aquarium plant is what it really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
People dump it out of their aquarium and it gets in the waterway and then it explodes. But it came from overseas, just like carp.
Yeah.
Yep. We got carp controlling grass and none of them are native to this country.
Exactly.
If people hadn't have brought them over, we would have no carp of any kind.
Right.
Even though brown ones are not native. None of them are native. And so, but anyway, we got non-native to control non-native.
That's right. So kind of hopping back onto your fishing career and success. You got any stories or legendary catches on this lake you want to tell us about?
I mean, the biggest stringer I ever caught was in the back to the PBF. The second year we came up here, we had 34 pounds. And we culled fish over 5 pounds. I culled a 5.5 pound smallmouth that day. It was the biggest smallmouth I'd ever caught at the time because Garza don't have hardly any. And I ended up culling it.
What'd you catch them? Crankbait?
All of them were on crankbaits.
All of them.
We might have caught a few stragglers on Carolina rig. We always mopped up with that or football jig, something like that. Mm-hmm. But that particular day, they were all on crankbaits. And it was. And when we pulled up, it was on. And we probably caught 60 or 70 bass that day.
Yeah.
And a bunch of them were 3-4 pounders that we just threw back.
Sure.
But back then, the schools were so big and there was so many fish. And then later on, before when everybody first started scanning, they were the same way. They were just as good. There was big schools out there.
Hmm.
So let me ask you this then, kind of going back to the Jetta tournament, you stayed true to crankbait. You seem like you throw crankbait almost anywhere and everywhere. Is that about right?
I used to.
Used to?
I actually don't throw it anywhere near. Now, this past summer I did.
Yeah.
But I kind of got away from it to a point until they started coming back. So when the bass first started coming back here, you could get some of those schools. There wasn't somebody on all of them.
Right. So, Jetta Classic, how many days was that? Was it?
It was a single day.
Was it a single
one day tournament?
Okay. Yeah. Was there any point in that day where you were like, I think I've got it? Like, even before the weigh-in?
Be honest with you, I never thought I had it.
Really?
First, I underestimated the fish.
Sure.
I only weighed the two smallest ones to cull. When you pull up on a place and their big ones are biting, I don't take the time to weigh them.
Yeah.
You want to get them while they're hot because they don't stay hot long.
That's right.
That shallow. And so the biggest ones bit first, which is quite common when you're fishing school.
Shallow or deep?
Oh, yeah, both.
Yeah.
I mean, deep, if there were a lot of big ones there, you always caught them first.
Hmm.
And small ones start biting. A lot of times you never catch another big one. Now, last year here was opposite because the schools were full of small ones.
Right.
So sometimes you had to wade through to get a big one.
Right.
But anyway, I didn't weigh the big ones. I never weighed them. And the two small ones weighed 3-1 and 3-3. And I thought, I knew the other ones were in the 4-pound range.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought we had about 17 and a half, somewhere in that range. I underestimated the big ones. And so when we went up there to the weigh-in, I didn't think we had a chance. I never thought we had a chance all day.
Right.
I did a lot of scoping, trying to catch a kicker, and I never could. Caught some small ones, but I never caught a kicker.
Mm-hmm.
And we pulled up there. We were the last boats up there.
Right.
And we had trouble finding a place to park. And so we were the next, I think we were the next to last or second to last weighing in. But when we started up there, evidently all the people, stringers, came in late. Because I heard them say, and he got real excited and said, 16 pounds. And I said, oh, as excited he's sounding, that's close, got to be close to the winning weight. And I said, well, we're close.
Yeah.
Now I thought, well, we are close.
We might have a shot here.
And then there was another 16. And then all of a sudden.
You dump yours in there.
The two people ahead of us, the last guy ahead of us jumped to 18-12.
Right.
Now I didn't think we had it.
Until it said 19 on the scale when you dropped him in there.
Yeah, but I mean, he said 18-12 before we weighed, and I thought I had about 17.5.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I thought we were going to get beat out and end up second or third or something like that. And then he dropped them up there, and I let Tim. Tim took them up there. He's younger. He can handle them better than I can. But he took them up there, and I was just standing out there, and they said 19-1. I said, whoa. And then he weighed the big fish we had, and it weighed 4.6 some, which percentage-wise, that's almost a 4.12.
Yes, right.
As soon as he said that, I knew why we had it. I had underestimated their size.
Yeah, that was an awesome win. That was really cool.
But it was a shocker because I never anticipated, never had to wait through it.
Right.
That's one of the few turns I've ever took the lead at the very end, and there's nobody, there's only one boat left, four. And that's never happened all these years I've fished. Right. I've never come in there like that.
Yeah.
And not expecting it, and then all of a sudden, bam.
Awesome.
How many years have you fished the Jetta series?
Not many.
Not many.
I can't really recall. I know I fished it last year and probably the year before. I don't think I fished it further back. I don't know if I had a conflict or. Mm.
They say it's one of the hardest tournaments to win on this lake, which I agree. It's all so the
everybody's
locals.
Everybody's trying really hard to win.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're all absolutely.
For best sure. Fishermen are pretty much qualified
that's
every
right.
year.
And that's yeah. right.
It's the best. It's, you know, you're fishing against the best guys.
100%. Yeah.
And, just every once in a while, a good fisherman don't make it. But I think one year I didn't. I may have a year where I didn't make it. I don't remember for sure. Mm-hmm. But I did fish it last year, but I didn't do good in the class.
Right.
Last year was a heartbreaker for me, Ed. 1 ounce between me and Jakey.
Really?
He won it. We got second. I think he had 19-14, and we had 19-13.
That Monday was rough.
Yeah, it was rough. Well, I mean, think about it. It's the difference between 20,000 and 3,000. It was really rough.
I've been in on some of those one-ounce deals. I know we missed winning a boat at Garnsville 1 year by 1 ounce.
God almighty.
And oof. I won a series tournament. It was me and Wesley Strader was up there. And I was one of the last ones to weigh in that day. And that time they went to the, you know, they cut it to like 10. So it was only 10 of us weighing in. And I was barely leading. No, I take that back. We zeroed the last day. But for some reason, I weighed in last. And I'm contradicting what I just said. I did weigh in last, but there was only 10 people. And when I put them on the scales, I had to have 17.5 to win. And I had 17.5. Wesley had 17.4. So I beat him 1 ounce.
Shoo.
And what's crazy, Wesley lost several tournaments by 1 or 2 ounces, or he'd be second by just barely lose that year.
Dang.
He got a little streak, but Wesley's a really good fisherman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I bet he 1 ounce.
I think it's amazing how that stuff can happen. You've got all these people out there, and then it comes down to 1 ounce between first and second.
It does a lot. I mean, it comes down to.
It seems like it happens a lot.
It comes down like it a lot. It's And sometimes you're on the right end, sometimes you're on the wrong end.
That's right.
I've been on both, so I know the feeling both ways.
Sure.
So let me ask you this. This could be a question for both of you then. Would you rather, if you are going to come in second place, would you rather lose by an ounce or two or like 3 pounds?
Pounds.
I think the pounds probably because you don't second guess yourself as much.
Right. There's nothing else you could have done.
Right.
Yeah. Well, caught a 6-pounder.
Well, yeah. I mean, just catch the biggest fish, you know.
Yeah, but that don't happen very often.
It doesn't bother you as bad to lose by two or three as it does by very small amounts.
Yeah. Right.
And I've lost several by small amounts.
Well, for me, mainly because we weigh the fish on a digital. I do.
Right.
On a digital scale. So in the back of your mind, you're like, well, I wonder if it was wrong.
Right.
1 ounce. I mean, you could have culled the wrong fish or, you know, sometimes I've noticed where I'll weigh one and then I'll put it down and I'll weigh it again. It'll be a couple ounces different.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like.
Or you've got two and they both teeter around a similar way. Oh,
yeah.
And they go back and forth.
Right.
And then you might have kept the wrong one.
Yeah. Or you keep one and it spits up a shad that weighs 3 ounces in your live well.
It's all just a gamble.
Yeah.
That happens quite.
It does. It happens often.
I never thought about that. That's
it happens often. So we've got a lot of tournament fishermen that listen, Ed. Do you have any tips that you do pre-tournament, like the night before, the week before, just to not
get the mind right?
Yeah, get your mind right, get everything.
I don't do anything special to get my mind right. I just like to fish.
You just love it.
What I try not to do is catch my fish pre-fishing. I think a lot of people err.
Yeah.
By catching too many in practice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many days of practice is too many? What's about right?
Really, truly, 2 or 3 days. If you don't find them in 2 or 3 days, you're probably not going to.
Sure.
But I mean, if I can practice 5, I do it.
Yeah.
But I've won a lot of them with one.
Right. One day.
But what I do here is I try to stay off places I think I might catch a good one, mm-hmm. and I don't practice on them.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so what I do in practice, try to find somewhere else to catch either a different pattern or.
Yeah.
Just for like if you're fishing brush, I'll fish brush I've never caught them on. And if I catch one or two doing that, I'm going to assume they're going to be on the good ones.
Yep.
Yep.
But what's happened recently is it's got where I don't catch any. It's gotten a lot harder, and I'm a little bit unsure of it. And so if you start looking for some other stuff. You know, like one term this summer, I did real good. It was the BFL 2 day. I finished second. I caught a lot of my fish on Carolina rig.
Really?
And I hadn't been doing that.
Picked it up and got a bite, turned into another bite.
Down to school.
Yeah.
And they were pretty good ones, but they weren't good enough to win the tournament. But you could get some couple 4-pounders out of them and 3.5-pounders and leave there with a reasonable stringer. You know, you leave there with 3 that weighed. I'd been better off if it had been a 5-fish limit back because I had some more.
You were throwing back 3-pounders.
Yeah.
Right.
And, but you leave there with a couple 4s and a 3.5, mm-hmm. and now you've got 11.5 pounds with a 3-fish limit. So now you're looking for a kicker. The first day I got the kicker, second day I didn't. And so Jake got the kicker both days. Last day he caught a really good one right to end.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, he's pretty good at kicking the kickers.
Jake is
an awesome fisherman.
Absolutely.
He's awesome.
Yeah.
Jake's a monster.
There's a lot of good competition around here.
Oh, yeah. It is absolutely.
It's strong.
You go to Pickwick and look at the top 12. Almost every one of them was from Kentucky Lake.
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
In fact, there was one guy that went to the dam that won from Kentucky Lake to finish like 5th.
Yep.
Trent, I believe it.
Surratt,
yeah.
I think is who it was.
Yep.
Yeah.
I don't. Almost everybody else. I finished 13. I'm in the group. I mean, I just didn't make it. But there's another Kentucky Lake. But,
right.
And it was unreal stringers.
100%. I think out of the top 30, more than 50% of them were LBL.
I'm sure. And out of the top 13, it was probably 90%.
Yeah, it was like 8% of them.
That says something.
And I fished that same in regional, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago. And what I caught at the last one would have won the first one.
Yeah, I remember. I was there. It was terrible.
They would have won it easy.
I made the last day. Or no, I didn't. I almost made the last day, and I didn't even have a limit both days.
I finished 4th with low 30s, 33, 30, about what I weighed in, but I did it in 3 days, in 2 days. I had 3 12, 13-pound stringers. And so, if you'd have told me before the tournament started I was going to have 35, 15, 2 days, I'll be in there. I was out by 2 pounds.
I think anybody would have.
Yeah, I missed it by 2 pounds.
I mean, I think the top 10 had 20 plus.
Yeah.
Every day.
I would have never dreamed it. But they are really good. They have got it dialed in down, especially down there. It's even better down there than here.
Yeah. Well, they're not weaving through
cars. There's bigger fish down there.
Yeah.
But doesn't seem, you know, it's about the same thing. But they're just good at it. I mean, they are good at it. And Mateo, if he ever dials them in, he can catch them.
Yep. Yeah,
unreal at catching fish.
He was telling me we fished a little tournament out of Danville a couple weeks ago. He was telling me he caught 23 pounds off one stump at Pickwick.
That's amazing. Out in that current.
Yeah.
I let the current psych me just a little.
Me too.
I stayed off the current.
I know.
Basically doing the same thing, but not doing it in the current. I messed up.
Yeah.
It was a mistake. I didn't think they would stay out there that good with over 100,000.
Yeah. Well, I told a couple people I talked to, I learned from it. So what to do next time.
To never ignore Kern ever again.
Yeah. That's right. It's never too much.
Nope.
They'll get behind something.
That's about it. You know, it don't get a lot stronger. I mean, here sometimes it has.
Yeah.
But most of the time, that's pretty max for a year.
Right.
And I stayed out there.
So let's talk about next year. So I can imagine you're probably going to fish the Jetta tournaments next year.
Planning on it.
And then I would almost say with 100% confidence, you're fishing the BFLs.
Yes, although I may branch out and go to Mississippi.
Oh, there you go. Okay. So LBO and Mississippi.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right now, my plans are to fish the Mississippi Division II.
Okay.
And the only bad thing, they have now got it conflicted.
I know.
They switched it put the 2 day on LBL and the Mississippi on the same day.
Yep.
You could fish the Hoosier Division. They're coming here too, Indiana.
It's just, feel like.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they are.
I feel like I'm more guaranteed to make it on the Mississippi Division.
Sure.
Because of 3 Pickwick tournaments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Hoosier Division lakes majority of them are tough.
Do you think you could fish just the 3 Pickwick tournaments and the Super Tournament?
It depends on the numbers. Last year, it'd been easy.
Because that I didn't realize 3 of them were on Pickwick, but are you going to fish any of the Toyota series next year?
I'm thinking about fishing the one here and the one at Gunnersville.
Mm-hmm. In May. What about the one at Pickwick? February?
Probably not.
No. At Gunnersville caught my eye, too.
That was always my favorite time of the year. The only problem with Gunnersville is all the really good deep places are just community holes like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah.
But
it'll still get one that way.
It's going to get one that way. And I mean, I know it as good as anybody. Sure. I mean, so I figure there's a good chance I'm going to fish that one because my tennis season's over.
Right.
And I'm totally free.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe here's a little more problem because of Coach Tennis.
Mm.
It's in the way. So yeah. I'll have to work that out somewhat to fish here, but I wouldn't mind fishing here.
Yeah.
But that's probably the only ones I'm going to do. It's just so expensive to fish that stuff.
Oh, yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And, well, I mean, you kind of got to pick and choose.
Retired school teacher, I don't have a, you know, I don't make a ton of money, so I can't afford, you know, it's about $3,000 expenses or more to go fish one per term.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
And if it's way off, it can be more.
Well, and that's the thing. So you kind of got to pick. Which one do I have the best shot at getting that $3,000 back plus some?
You know? I wouldn't mind fishing all 3 of them. I mean, they're not bad for me.
They're all TVA.
Yeah. I don't fish a lot in February. I'm not sure about Pickwick in February.
I feel like it could be really good or it could be really nasty.
It could be bad.
Wind, snow.
Yeah, there's so many weather variables that come in. Yeah, like you're saying. Yeah. I mean, it could be awful. Pickwick can be rough.
Oh, yeah.
You get a northwest wind.
And there's nowhere to go. There's no pot. You go to Bear or Indian or Yellow.
Yeah.
It's the only place you can hide.
There's not a ton of good fishing places in those creeks like there are in the river.
Yeah.
It is a very river run place.
Right.
And at Gunnersville, I could get out of it.
No, oh, yeah.
Gunnersville's got plenty of sloughs.
Yeah. And it seems like it winds around enough that
it winds more. The fetch is never quite as long.
Yeah.
So this lake's bad because it lines up with the wind so good.
Yeah.
The wind's almost always north or south.
Right.
And when it lines up for that kind of a fetch, it don't take much to make it rough.
Nope.
And Pickwick lines up with a northwest wind is the killer. It comes roaring down that main lake, and it can be 4 or 5 footers out there. In a hurry.
Yeah.
And it can be bad. And so Gunnersville, the weather worries me the least. Here the most, and Pickwick next.
Mm.
The weather can kill you here.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, looking forward to next year, are you going to fish the, is it Illini or Illini? How do you say it? Are you going to fish the Illini at all?
You know, I have, but I haven't really looked to see where they go.
They're 2 days here.
Yeah.
Well, I may fish the 2 day. I don't know if I'll fish.
That's what I'm
saying. Where's the, I don't remember where their regional is.
I don't.
Are they?
La Crosse?
Maybe.
It may be La
Crosse. That's where they went this year, maybe.
That's a long trip.
Yeah, that's like 3.5 hours.
That's a long way.
It's like 3.5 hours from here.
They say it's a good fishery, but
yeah,
it's one of those where it's going to be real tight.
Yeah.
Everybody catches them.
Yeah.
And catching a big one becomes the thing. And I've never been there. I probably won't fish the Illini as a division.
Yeah.
Mm. I used to like to go to Shelbyville. I've had 3 top 10s there out of 4 tries.
That's a good average.
So, you know, it's just a long way. Yeah. If it wasn't so far, I'd fish it every year.
Yeah.
Well, I know they've got one usually on Wren Lake. I don't know if you ever go up there or not.
I'm not in love with Wren Lake.
Yeah, no, I don't like Wren.
And, you know, I can go up there during the week, nobody there, and you can catch some.
Yeah.
You won't kill them, but you can catch them.
Sure.
But what happens in the tournament, like so small, and the fish are caught so much off the shallow cover.
Mm-hmm.
That it's just a boat on every piece of it.
Yep.
And it just gets hard to catch them all tournament day.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I got a check up there one time with one fish, 4 pounds.
Wow.
I mean, now this last year, they actually caught them reasonably well on that lake on a couple tournaments. So I think there's fish in it. It's just the way it fishes.
Right.
It is a very small lake. And when the water goes down with all the timber out there, it becomes very difficult to get around.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody fishes the same little riprap stretches and whatever woods in the water.
Yeah.
And a lot of those fish get caught off some of that riprap with a square bill. I mean, it's just kind of everybody doing the same thing. You're throwing a buzz bait, a square bill, and a shatter bait or a spinner bait. And you're fishing 2 foot deep in August, July. It doesn't matter.
Right.
If the water gets up enough to get into the bushes, it goes behind them like 200 or 300 yards.
Yeah.
And the fish don't stay on the outside edge much. They go up in it, and it's hard to flip them. You don't get many bites.
Hmm.
And you can hear them blowing up back there, and you can't get near them.
Yeah.
It's got too much water behind the bushes.
Yeah. Right.
So we'll have to watch next year then for Mississippi results and maybe a few LBO results.
Right. I tell you what I wish I could do. I don't know why I'm going to pull this one off. They're having a regional at Seminole. And they hadn't had one a long time. Seminole is my favorite fall fishery. I'd go there before Garnerville.
Really?
Or Kentucky Lake.
Huh.
I just have had an unreal way of finding. I can always find big ones at Seminole.
You're just dialed in.
I've been to 3 All-Americans from Seminole.
Yeah.
I've had 2 more that I should have went. One of them, the first day of the tournament, I lost 5 that would have weighed about 27, 28 pounds and weighed in 0.
Jeez.
The next day, I lost my first 2, and I caught my last 3. I had 17-something with 3.
That's incredible.
That's nuts. Fish. I was catching giants, but I wouldn't get many bites. If I landed them, I would have made Dollar American in 2 days. But I zeroed the first day hooking that size fish.
God almighty.
And then the next year I go down there and I make top 12. And then the last day I hook 6. They all got off. The best 5 would have weighed 27, 28 pounds again. I had one that was probably 10, almost the net. I caught him flipping, or I hooked him flipping. He tore the mat up. He was in the mat. He was one of them punching ones.
Mm-hmm.
And he ripped the mat all to pieces. I got him out of the mat. He was done wore out at this point, and he was just doing, I could see in water real clear, he was just doing like this. And he was coming up, and all of a sudden, everybody goes, out of his mouth.
Oh.
He's probably 10 pounds.
Wow. And
I had another one that tore the mat up, and it came off in the mat. My call anger. I came up to a little point where I'd caught a 4-pounder in practice, but I hadn't caught one in a tournament. The bait wasn't there in the tournament. The bait was there in the practice. Well, I come up to it in that last day, and the bait was there. I saw it. Needlefish were going, needlefish are an unreal sign at Seminole. And I knew there was something there. And I took that spinner bait, a little white one that I was catching them on, and I throwed it, and I throwed it. It was on a corner about as big as this table we're at. And I made 15 casts at that corner trying to catch that fish, and he wouldn't bite. I said, well, he's just not there. He's not going to bite. So I moved the boat. You know what's fixing to happen? My Cullinger fires in there, 4-pounder. First cast. Spinnerbait. Oh. White spinnerbait.
Same bait.
He puts it in live well, throws right back, catches another one. 2 4-pounders after I made 15 casts at that corner. Same thing.
What are the chances of that?
White spinnerbaits.
How's that happen?
I have no idea. It's just some days it's not meant to be.
That's right.
Some and days then it works out. He throwed a spinnerbait on top of a grass mat. I was coming to flip it, and he just fired the spinnerbait up on top of it. It was a mat, thick. He would just bring it over top of the mat, a spinnerbait, and a 6-pounder comes up and hits it, jumps 4 or 5 foot out of the water with that spinnerbait, and he catches it. And he weighed in four that weighed almost 18 pounds.
Did he
behind
win?
Me, and he won the boat.
Yeah.
God, man.
And I had 6 great big ones on, and they all got off.
So you're looking for revenge on Seminole.
Yeah, I got some revenge.
You're going back. Yeah.
But to go to it, I have to go to Atlanta.
Mm. Yeah.
There's 2 divisions that go to it. One's in the Atlanta area, which is they fished Lanier twice and a couple of Eufaula once. I love Eufaula. And they fish a couple other lakes that are down southeast of Atlanta. It's just kind of central to south in Georgia. The other one's in Florida. You know, they're down there at Toho and Kissimmee and all them places. I'd love to go down there, but that's 12, 13 hours probably. It's just too far.
It's a long
way.
It costs
too much money.
It's a long way.
What I'm thinking about is maybe fishing a couple of them and see just how many people
show up
for those divisions.
Yep. Yeah.
See, last year in Mississippi at Pickwick was where their 2-day was. 70 boaters signed up, 60 co-anglers. They ended up with 67 boaters actually fished. I was going to fish, so I couldn't get a co-angler. I advertised. And so I said, well, in Mississippi, if they're taking top 65, and they only had 67 fish at the regional or the 2-day at Pickwick, you know, with the regional going to be at Pickwick, I thought, gosh. And so how big that one gets is going to depend on how many come from LBL. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
So it might be possible to fish 3 and make it.
There'll probably be a few go down there.
There was only about maybe 30 that caught fish in every tournament or weighed them in. The numbers dropped dramatically from 20 to 60. I mean, it was unreal drop. So, I mean, I think you could actually have made it last year to the regional fishing too.
Wow.
And just paying for the other ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're going to see a lot of these divisions for majority of the fields going to go to the regional.
I agree.
I think that's what's fixing to happen.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, Ed, is there anything else you want to talk about? Is there anything else you want to discuss?
Nah, I'm good. I don't have anything else. I'm good.
Well, I don't want to hold you up too long.
I mean, I don't mind. Like, everybody knows me, knows I love to talk fishing.
Well, I'm glad you got to come in. I'm glad we had you here. We'll be on the lookout for some amazing results next year, and hopefully we'll see you out there.
I'm trying. I got to. You know, a lot of people say that older people can't compete anymore, and I'm trying to prove them wrong.
How old are you?
72.
72 years old, just won the Jetta Classic against a bunch of phenomenal fishermen.
A lot of
best competition in the Midwest right here on Kentucky Lake.
Yep.
Ed Geddes won it. Good job, Ed.
Thank you.
Talk again.
All right, guys, that is a wrap on another episode. Be sure to follow us on all of our socials, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok. TikTok. Send us a DM. If you want to hear a specific topic or even a guest, give us some feedback. Once again, we appreciate you for listening.